like to turn to the book of Matthew, chapter 14. Book of Matthew, chapter 14. To look at the miracle of walking on the water, Matthew, Mark, and Luke all record Jesus walking on the water, which of course is a miracle, and we want to consider that. Matthew is the only one who records that Peter also walked on the water, which of course is a miracle as well. But begin reading with verse 22, reading through verse 33. And straightway Jesus constrained his disciples to get into a ship and to go before him unto the other side, while he sent the multitudes away. And when he had sent the multitudes away, he went up into a mountain apart to pray. When the evening was come, he was there alone. But the ship was now in the midst of the sea, tossed with waves, for the wind was contrary. And in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went unto them, walking on the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, It is a spirit or a ghost. And they cried out for fear. But straightway Jesus spoke unto them, saying, Be of good cheer, it is I, be not afraid. And then this part here only Matthew records. And Peter answered him and said, Lord, if it be thou, bid me come unto thee on the water. And he said, Come. And Peter, when Peter was come down out of the ship, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. But when he saw the wind boisterous, he was afraid. Beginning to sink, he cried, saying, Lord, save me. And immediately Jesus stretched forth his hand and caught him, and said unto him, O thou of little faith, wherefore didst thou doubt? And when they, Jesus and Peter, were come into the ship, the wind ceased. And they that were in the ship came and worshipped him, saying, Of a truth, thou art the Son of God. Now, this follows the miraculous feeding of over 5,000 people. After Jesus fed these over 5,000 people, we see that he constrained his apostles to get into a ship and to cross over the Sea of Galilee. Notice in verse 22 of Matthew 14, And straightway or immediately Jesus constrained his disciples to get into a ship and go before him unto the other side, while he sent the multitudes away. Now, Mark adds something extra in Mark chapter 6, verse 45, And straightway he constrained his disciples to get into the ship and to go to the other side before unto Bethsaida. So that gives us an idea of what part of the Sea of Galilee they were in. So they went to they would eventually go to the coasts of Bethsaida. Now after Jesus sent the multitudes away, the well over 5,000, he did not immediately go to the disciples or to the apostles, but instead we read he went into a mountain to pray. In the meantime, the disciples are making their way across the Sea of Galilee. In verse 23 of Matthew 14, And when he had sent the multitude away, he went up into a mountain apart to pray. And when the evening was come, he was there alone. So there's Jesus. He's on this mountain. He is praying. And the disciples below are experiencing a life-threatening storm. Now, in Mark chapter 6, verse 48, And he saw them, that is Jesus again on top of this mountain, he saw them toiling and rowing, for the wind was contrary unto them, and about the fourth night about the fourth watch of the night, he cometh unto them walking upon the sea, and would have passed them by. So Jesus is up in the mountain, he's praying, and he sees his people down upon the sea. Now this, of course, is a beautiful picture of what Jesus is doing even right now in heaven. He sits at the right hand of God, he makes intercession for us, and he sees everything that we are going through at any particular time. So Matthew, Mark, and John all record this miracle. And this miracle, what it teaches us is that, which is what all the miracles teach us, is that Jesus is sufficient. Not only is Jesus sufficient, he is always sufficient. There is never a time in which Jesus Christ is not sufficient. The first thing we want to look at is the disciples in the storm, and then we'll get to, not today, but we'll get to Jesus walking on the water, what that means, and then we see the possibilities that we have through Peter, that we too can walk on the waters. Now, first of all, the disciples in the storm, so Jesus sends them across the Sea of Galilee, and he goes into this mountain to pray. And the next time we read of the apostles, we see that they are in the midst of the sea. Notice in verse 24, but the ship was now in the midst of the sea, tossed with waves, for the wind was contrary. Mark chapter 6, verse 47, and when evening was come, the ship was in the midst of the sea, and he alone on the land. Now, this is important because this tells us that the ship was in the midst of the sea, because this tells us something about the storm. There was, at this point, there is no turning around point. They're out in the middle. They can't turn. It wouldn't make sense to turn around and go all the way back. So it tells us something about the storm. Now, we all know that storms all through the Word of God are a picture. They are a picture of trials. They are a picture of difficulties. They are a picture of hardships and struggles. They are pictures of the adversities that God's people sometimes go through. They're pictures of the burdens and the stresses that God's people must deal with in this life. They're even a picture of the setbacks of life. There for a while, these apostles were making headway, and then suddenly that all comes to a halt. They're no longer making headway. So there was a setback. The storms also, of course, are pictures of afflictions. They're pictures of battles. They're pictures of the obstacles of life. And we see several storms in the ministry of Christ, and we see also storms in the Old Testament as well. And one thing we learn about the storms, of course, is that storms are inevitable. They're going to happen. And there's nothing you can do to prevent a storm from coming. They are completely out of your control. They are inevitable. And at times, storms are totally unpredictable. And I believe this was one of those storms. Of course, it wasn't unpredictable to the Lord. The Lord, when he sent the apostles across, knew exactly what he was doing. He knew the storm would come. He knew exactly when the storm would come. He knew what the disciples would do in the storm. He knew what he would do in the storm. So it's not unpredictable to the Lord. It's not unknown to the Lord. But for you and I, the storms at times are unpredictable. Here they had just gone from witnessing a wonderful miracle, and the next time we read of them, they're in the midst of a life-threatening storm. So the storms can come suddenly. The storms are unpredictable. Now, when Jesus constrained them to get into a ship and go before him to the other side, did he not know that there would be a storm? Of course he did. So therefore, since Jesus knew there was going to be a storm, And since Jesus constrained the apostles to get into a boat and to head out to that sea where the storm would be, did not he deliberately direct them into the storm? Yes, he did. Jesus Christ deliberately directed them into the storm. People today sometimes get the idea, well, the Lord doesn't want you to go through this storm. But that's foolish. And you have no scriptural basis for such a statement. We see that the Lord directed them into the storm. Now, if the Lord deliberately directs you into something, he has a plan. He has a purpose for directing you into that storm. And this is what happened here. The apostles went from witnessing a mighty miracle into the eye of a storm, and it was the Lord who directed them into both. It was the Lord who directed them to see the miracle. It was the Lord who directed them into the midst of this storm. So there was a change of circumstances. And the change came suddenly, and the change came very, again, unaware. So again, a quick change of circumstances can be very trying at times, depending on the change. But again, Christ knew all about it. And he not only knew about it, he appointed it. And in the end, it would all work out for their good. And that's the situation today as well. So we want to notice some things about this storm. We see in John chapter 6, John chapter 6 and verse 18, John 6, verse 18, and the sea arose by reason. So here's the cause of the sea rising, the waves rising. And the sea arose by reason of a great wind that blew. So this storm involved a substantial wind. A wind that was very significant. Something that is great is extraordinary. It's not the norm. It's not the norm. So this wind was not the norm. Something that is great can be very large. Something that is great can be very extensive, very broad, very immense. And this was a great wind. It was an enormous wind. It was, and they're in the midst of the sea. There's no escaping. There's no getting away from this wind. And many times there is no getting away from the trial. You might, unlike the disciples, you might be able to leave the physical spot of the storm, but you can't really leave the storm. Can't happen. I don't care where you go. It's not going to happen. So just getting away, I'm sorry, that's not the answer. And people have been doing that for years, and by now they should have figured out it doesn't work. I mean, it just doesn't work. But the next storm that comes, guess what? We got to get away. But it doesn't work. It doesn't fix anything. And the storm, that it was a great wind, shows that the storm was bigger than them. And that the trials of life many times are bigger than us. And really, the sooner you and I can realize that this trial is bigger than me, the better off you'll be. The sooner you can realize that this is something that I've just got to give to God because it's bigger than me, the better off you'll be. Secondly, we see that all appeared to be out of control. And verse 18 again, we see, and the sea arose. And Matthew records, because of the sea arising, Matthew 14, verse 24, but the ship was now in the midst of the sea, and because the sea was rising, the waves were rising, they were tossed with the waves. For the wind, that great wind that John referred to, was contrary to them. It wasn't a wind that was behind them, blowing them to the other side. It was a wind that was contrary. It was a wind that was in opposition to them. And as a result of this wind, it says that they were tossed. That is, they were flung and hurled about with absolutely no control. They had lost all control of that boat. They were not in control. Really, the wind was not in control. Though it appeared that the wind was in control, God was in control. And that's always the case. The wind is not in control. God is the one who controls the wind. He's the master of the wind. Therefore, he's in control. And that's always the case. But at this point, it appears that everything is out of control, and they certainly have no control. And when that happens, fear sets in. When everything seems to be out of control and you're being thrown from one side to the other, fear sets in. Thirdly, we see the storm appeared to be working against them. Again, we read in Mark chapter 6 and verse 48, the wind was contrary unto them. The wind was opposing them. Now, the wind, it only appeared. I mean, the wind was actually opposing them, but in all reality, the wind was not working against them, because this was all for their betterment. And so it is in our trials. It seems like it's all working against us. But if it's for our betterment, in reality, it's really not working against us. It's working for us. But it appears to be working against us. So Matthew and Mark both record that the wind was contrary. That is, the wind was blowing against them. The wind was opposing them. As a result, it says they were toiling in rowing. Mark chapter 6, verse 48. That is, because of this opposing wind, they began to labor. They began to travail. They began to struggle against the storm. But where did it get them? All it got them was it wore them out. And they became exhausted. The truth is, they're stuck in this storm. They're in the midst of the sea. They're not getting any further. The wind is blowing against them, and no matter how much they toiled, no matter how much they labored, they made no headway whatsoever. None. And many times this is the case with the storms. And again, it appeared that they had no place to go. Again, Matthew and Mark both record the ship was in the midst of the sea. Notice in John chapter 6, we get a better idea of what this means, that they were in the midst of the sea. John chapter 6, verse 19. And when they had rowed about 25 or 30 furlongs. So they're out 25 to 30 furlongs, about 3.5 miles. That's what it means to be in the midst of the sea here. They were about 3.5 miles out in the sea. So the Sea of Galilee, the part they were in, was about 7 miles wide. And they're 3.5 miles out. So they really have no place to go. And that's not, though we think it is, that's not a bad thing. That's always a good thing. When the Lord puts us in a position where we have absolutely no place to run, we have no place to go but the Lord, that's a good thing. Because as long as you and I
have a physical refuge, we are prone to go to that physical refuge. As long as you and I have a physical place to flee to, or a person to go to, or whatever, it is our tendency to go to that place rather than the Lord. But when the Lord brings us to a place and he removes all earthly refuges, and the only place you can go is the Lord, that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. But it speaks volumes of us. It speaks volumes of our sinful tendencies. The truth is, the Lord has to take away all human props for you and I to flee to him. We all have crutches. And many times the Lord has to kick the crutches out from under us before we'll ever flee to him. And that's what he did here. He led them out to the midst of the sea. And that's when the storm came. They had no place to turn but the Lord. And that's a good thing. There was darkness. There was loneliness. Matthew and Mark both record that it was in the fourth watch of the night. John says in John 6 and verse 17, it was now dark. And then he adds something that Matthew and Mark do not record. And Jesus was not come to them. Remember, he put them in the boat and he said, you go on ahead, implying that he would be with them soon. But it's now dark, and Jesus still is not come unto them, and they're beginning to wonder, where is he? He said he would be here. Where is he? And then, so there they are, three and a half miles out, in the midst of the sea. It's now dark. They appear to be all alone. Jesus has not come. They're in a storm that is bigger than themselves. Everything seems to be out of control. They are toiling and rowing. That is, they are struggling. They're doing everything they possibly can do, and yet they're making absolutely no headway. They have no place to turn, and it's dark, and it appears that Jesus has forsaken them. It appears that they're out on their own. And many storms are like that. They also fail to recognize the Lord in the midst of the storm. When Jesus began to move in their direction, began to walk upon the sea, these disciples who could feel the wind, they could physically feel the wind, they could physically see and feel the waves, but they did not recognize. They could feel their trials. They could see the trial. They could see and feel the storm, but they did not recognize the Lord, even when he was moving in their direction. That adds to your storm. Happens all the time. The storm is very, very real. We see it. We feel it. We see and feel all aspects of the storm. And there is Jesus in the midst, and he's not real. He's a ghost. Notice it says that they supposed it to be a spirit. And what that did was add to their fears. And you know, many times our suppositions in the storm will make your storm far worse than it is. We have a tendency to suppose a lot of things. And you know what we do when we suppose? Whatever we suppose, that becomes fact to us. It can be the furthest thing from reality. It can be the furthest thing from fact. But once you suppose it, it's now fact to you. And you try to let someone talk you out of that. Doesn't happen very easily. And they begin to suppose this is a ghost. And he's not here for our benefit. He's here to do something terrible to us. And they suppose that. And that just simply, as we'll see next week, that simply added to their fears. Let's look to the Lord. Word of prayer. Heavenly Father, we do thank